Welcome aboard hour number two of the Internet Advisor. This week, since we are preempted on our home station, WJR in Detroit, we have decided to take some of the questions that you folks send us during the week and give some answers to those as well. So glad that you decided to join us. By the way, you can do that by simply going to internetadvisor.net and then look for the contact button. Click on that and send us an email with your questions as well during the week. Back in just a moment to start answering your questions. Welcome aboard for the second hour of the Internet Advisor, and our posse is in studio here, Gary Baker, Ed Rudell, and Cal Carson, and this time of the program, normally, we answer your questions as you call in, and we have an 800 number that we normally use for that on our home station at WJR in Detroit, but for you folks who are enjoying this on the podcast, or for you who are listening to us on our affiliates, welcome to the second hour of the program. What we're going to do is, during the week, people, we've had, matter of fact, Ed Rudell will attest to this, we've had a lot of homework, or I was going to say, you've had a lot of homework answering a lot of questions that have come in from our listeners.
Yeah, a lot of listeners. And I'd like to select later in the show, we'll select a few of those listener questions and then read them off.
Yep, and we'll tell you
especially
about...
Especially the ones we already know the answer to.
that's a given. No, sorry, I'm going to bounce. You know, some of these I've had a difficult time with, so I'm going to let you, some of you guys.
Okay, all right. Give us some hard ones.
So there's we're going to get these challenges kind of cold from Ed coming up in just a moment. Right now, however, I want to introduce Mr. Mike Brennan, who is the editor of MI Tech News, a weekly service, I should say bi-weekly service. Or how do you say that, Mike, when it comes out twice a week?
Gosh, I don't know. I just call it coming out twice a week.
There you go. MI Tech News, because it's not just, and we started out this way with the news headlines and some great, you know, articles about technology and entrepreneurship in Michigan coming out once a week on Fridays in a text form, but you've expanded that now. So on Wednesdays as well, you get all sorts of audio feeds that you're giving.
Including the Internet Advisor.
That's right. That's right. IT in the D, your own broadcast, which is M Squared TechCast, that you and Matt Roush do, and a whole bunch of other things are available as resources.
Including the Diva Ladies.
Oh, yes, our Tech Divas.
Yep.
Kathleen Norton Shock and Amanda Lewan and, oh, help me.
Nicole Johnson Scheffler.
Thank you very much. I didn't remember her last married name because she just recently was married. Mm-hmm. Congratulations to her. But they were ladies who began on our Internet Advisor program and have gone off on their own and developed a really neat program there. And you, as a matter of fact, just kind of a little footnote here, with your M Squared TechCast, are actually developing all sorts of regular listening habits there. Richard Steenan, who was in our first hour, and Dan Lorman, once a month, come on and do a special on security.
Yeah, and we're adding a bunch of others. We just added Inforum. They're coming on board. We've got some other folks we're in discussions with, including SBAM, near and dear to Gary's heart.
Sure is.
So the more the merrier, right? I mean, we can't be experts at everything, but we bring the experts on, we ask them questions, and then our audience, well, they gain from that information, right?
Yeah, and what's so nice about this is that we're really kind of birthing a number of these different kind of podcasts, you really would say monthly broadcasts, where people who are interested in certain areas, like that Small Business Administration of Michigan, SBAM.
Small Business Association.
Association, pardon me.
You get a call from Michael Rogers there. You know.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I'm not part of the federal government. This is an association of small businesses.
Mike, is it automation?
But that said, I am meeting with Keith Brophy here in another week to talk to him about maybe bringing in the Michigan Small Business and Development Center, but that's not a done deal yet.
All right. Okay. Well, anyway.
And that's a great network of help for small businesses as well. So
by the way, when you folks look for this, M Squared TechCast is the name of the broadcast. You do it live. Live on Mondays from 3 to
4.
3 to 4 p.m. And then you can listen to that podcast through the podcastdetroit.com network, and which we're part of as well with the Internet Advisor. And it's a great place to catch podcasts of all different kinds, but you kind of become a resource as well, or a source of new podcasts for people who are interested in technology, like one of our listeners.
Well, there's a few of us on there. Mike... I'm drawing a blank on Mike's name. PC Mike. What is the Mike's last name?
Mike Wendland. Yeah.
Yep. Thank you. Yeah. This getting older thing, you know, it's killing me.
It's not just our hearing that's going when we get older.
Yes, exactly.
What? I can't hear you.
Mike Wendland, a great PC Mike, but a dear friend of ours and also somebody that we enjoy listening to and having with us on the air. Well, Mike, let's look at some of the headlines to give people an idea of what MI Tech News is, which is are the headlines that can be delivered on Fridays to people about technology and entrepreneurship. Some of the headlines, for example, about Western Michigan, that the auto suppliers out there have got a symposium coming up later on this coming week.
Yeah, the 10th, and they're going to be looking at mergers, acquisitions, new innovations, talent procurement, and I'm sure there'll be some technology topics thrown in on top of it. But West Michigan, you know, I grew up in West Michigan. That's always been a big auto supplier area, and so trying to get them all together and bring them up to speed on what's going on in the whole industry. So it's a day-long overview.
Mm-hmm. I love it.
It's very worthwhile. So.
What I like about it, too, is that most of our affiliates are out in the southwest part of Michigan, and along with Lansing. So I'm delighted that we're being able to bring that kind of news to them as well. There's a deadline coming up for Comcast. Has a very special thing going on for entrepreneurs.
Yeah, March 12th is the deadline, by the way, and it's the $440,000 Comcast Business Innovations for Entrepreneurs competition. And all you have to do is put together a 250-word essay that explains how your business can benefit from technology.
Wow.
And now there's two winners in the Heartland region here for Comcast, which is Michigan, Indiana, and parts of Kentucky. But they win $10,000 each, and then a finalist, there's six finalists, they win another $30,000 and go to Philadelphia and get mentored by all these top folks, and it's a heck of a deal.
It's neat the way Comcast is giving back to the community that way as well, which is great. By the way, the snowstorm this last week in Detroit shut down the grand opening of their Comcast store in downtown. But they just opened up a new store, right? A business store downtown in Detroit in the Campus Martius area.
Mike, Midtown area.
We've run out of time now, but all this goodness costs how much, Mike?
Zero.
That's right. Absolutely free to you. All you have to do, folks, if you're interested in this kind of information and more technology headlines like this, go to mitechnews.com. And sign up there absolutely for free or at our homepage, internetadvisor.net. Mike, thanks again.
Thanks, guys. Talk to you next week.
Take care.
Bye, Mike.
Before we get any further, I want to thank the people who are behind the glass. And if you've listened to us at all, you know that we are saluting the people who work diligently on the engineering and producing the program while we're hearing all, having all this fun. Rich Lozinski, thank you very much for your work as our engineer, and Logan Standifer, our producer, and full disclosure, my granddaughter is doing a great job. She's a pleasant voice, as Gary said, that you hear when you call in to the program. And unfortunately, this week, from our perspective, obviously, we're preempted from our flagship station, WJR in Detroit, because of another program that's on. But we still get to come on here and talk with you about the questions that you presented us during the week. Because normally, in the second hour of the program, it's your hour. You call in with your questions. That's not a possibility right now, but we've had so many questions that have come in during this past week. We've got like a dozen or so.
Oh,
that have, or maybe more than that.
Yeah, at least. And here's a good one that it threw me for a loop until I realized, you know, not everyone knows as much about computers as I do. But let me read this question from Dorothy. And it says, I have a sister who volunteers at the Christ of Church Catholic Church in Detroit. Mm-hmm. She has a computer that is connected to the internet, that is not connected to the internet.
Okay.
Today she turned on the computer and it states it's out of range. She can't do anything on the computer. Do you have any idea what this is?
So it's like a computer that sits in the corner and is
out of range?
Does out of range mean?
If it doesn't connect to the internet, what is it ranging in on?
Well, this threw me for a loop and until I thought about it. And depending on the computer, she has a desktop computer, right? Mm-hmm. And then you buy a monitor or an LCD panel. And the only time I've seen this message is when the video card frequencies were out of range for the monitor.
Oh, cool.
So the monitor, what happens, somehow the video card settings have changed or the monitor default settings have changed and it can no longer interpret the video signals coming from the computer. Now, if you remember, we have 60 hertz running at, you know, 640 by 480 and 1024 by 968. Those are the different
resolutions
of the computer. So for some reason, the video card is sending a resolution to the monitor that it can no longer support or read.
Okay, so it's sending it to the monitor rather than the monitor sending it to... I'm thinking if it's an older monitor, let's say.
Even if it's not.
CRT?
It always comes from the computer. It doesn't come from the monitor.
Comes from
the monitor receives whatever the computer delivers to it as long as it's... Within range.
Or it can interpret the frequencies and the signals that it goes to it. There are certain default signals that the monitors have to interpret, if you will.
Okay.
And anyways, somehow, for some reason, it's out of range. So the first thing I suggest is when she powers up the computer, if she can even do it, tap the F8 key and go into safe mode.
Okay.
Because one of the things she did not say is that when she powers it up, she didn't say if it was... if she even saw like it counting memory, you know how you get the manufacturer's logo and then it comes into login and then it says out of range. Well, tap the F8 key, assuming that it's Windows 7, which it probably is if it's located in a church or something like that. It's probably
might be XP, computer. As a matter of fact.
And come into safe mode. And what that'll do is it'll load default video software and default settings. So just about any monitor out there will be able to interpret those.
Right, and when you're in safe mode, it should then show up on the monitor, the black and white images, the white images on a black screen.
Right, and if not, at least come up in safe mode with networking, and you can go to the manufacturer's site and re-download, you know, look up your computer, look up the video card, and re-download the video drivers for your computer.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing you could do is check the video cable. I guess that should have been the first thing I said to her.
Yeah.
If the video cable's a little loose...
I've had that happen in the past, when I had a problem, and it was that... In the older days, I didn't screw down, you know, those two screws that are on each side of the cable. I just kind of lazily plugged it in. And then in the process of just kind of jostling things around, it had come loose, and suddenly I didn't have any image on my screen. Right. And I had to just readjust it and then screw those two things down to hold it in place.
Right. I mean, there are four things that I could think of doing this, and five if I was to include a cat. But so it could be a loose cable. Or a squirrel in Gary's case, right? You know, gnawing through the cable. But a loose cable, the bad monitor, right? So maybe the video monitor is going bad. The drivers or somehow the settings on the computer have changed.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would download new drivers for the monitor. Mm-hmm. And the fourth thing is your hard drive is about ready to fail.
Mm-hmm.
And it just so happened to fail in a Windows files that actually contain the drivers for the video card. I've seen... similar things happen. Mm. So you might want to run a check disk on your computer or check it for disk errors and attempt to repair it.
Would a simple, for instance, swapping of monitors, of course, nowadays are light enough.
Six things if you take out the cat. That's a great suggestion.
Just take a flat screen monitor, because they are so lightweight, and bring it over and plug it in and see if it sees it.
Absolutely. That's a great suggestion.
But I would imagine in a church, something like that, it's an old CRT, one of those... cathode ray tubes that weighs about 80 pounds.
Well, not necessarily. I mean, we've had flat screen monitors for 10 years now.
That's true.
And they're cheap now.
Oh, they are now.
I mean, you can go in and get a 23-inch flat screen for under $100.
Yes, yes. Yeah. I have Newegg shows up on my email from them, and Newegg is one of those sites that has a lot of the sales on right now. And
Newegg, Direct,
27-inch for $99.
Yep.
I mean, that's incredible.
Yeah, it is.
It's incredible. So, yeah, okay, good. And so we're hoping that that's for Pat, right? I think it was you mentioned it was for Pat. We're going to see.
As I reach into the finished pile. No, that was from Dorothy.
Dorothy, okay. Dorothy, we'd be interested to hear from you if this is something that has helped you and anybody else out there that has helped by that answer as well. Next.
Okay, here's one. It says, is using a USB stick or a flash drive a good way to back up a computer or system files? We have 50 gigabyte of... memory, and I'm assuming they mean data they need to back up, on a Windows 7 system. We're a nonprofit organization with not a lot of money.
Mm.
Yeah. Here's the deal. Any backup is better than no backup.
There we go.
So if you're a nonprofit, if money is an issue, yeah, sure. A USB thumb drive, if you can buy one that's big enough to back up all your data on, is more than sufficient. It's a great thing to do, because not having a backup at all, and you're just totally out of luck. But in that particular case, I would think that you should be able to drum up enough money to get two USB drives, and then back it up twice. That way, in case you have failure with the restore on one, you still have the other one to go back to. And you can also alternate between the two. One week, do it on USB drive A. Next one, do it on USB drive B. And then that way, you'll always have two backups. You'll have two chances of restore. And the most exposure you'll have is maybe a week's worth of loss.
Now, Gary, do you still use cloud-based backup services?
Actually, that's the only thing I do. Okay. And I don't back up anymore.
Because everything's in the cloud?
Because everything's in the cloud. It's automatically backed up. And I don't save anything on my hard drive anymore.
Okay, so you use...
And if I, for whatever reason, I can't get to the cloud, the internet signal is weak wherever I'm at, and I'm still using the computer, I'll put it on my drive, hard drive, and then as soon as I get somewhere, I'll put it up in the cloud.
The difference is that Gary is not a nonprofit, so he has... The ability in this particular case to service.
It's unlimited. $9
a month, right?
Yeah, I pay $99 a year for 5 connections. Yes. So my whole family plus one, I've adopted somebody.
So
okay, so in that particular case, that nonprofit should go through the trouble of writing a nice grant and getting $99.
And that's where I was heading for this. So a lot of people are thinking
and Microsoft
old days.
Will give them a better deal for a nonprofit.
Oh, okay.
And that's what I'm thinking, is a lot of people are not thinking of cloud-based storage or products like Office 360 with a yearly subscription. Yeah, get your doctor to write your prescription, a subscription, and they're very inexpensive. It's actually cheaper to purchase this than an external hard
drive.
Can
I tell you what I'm looking at right now on the screen? It just blows my mind.
And also, I want to say Google gives you drive space.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
With your Google.
With a Google account. How much space do you get there with the Google Drive account?
I think it's a terabyte.
Yeah, I think close
and to. And you can buy another one for very cheap.
Well, Microsoft, the same thing goes,
same
I think.
Thing.
Is with
yeah,
OneDrive, you get a terabyte of storage. By the way, guys, I'm looking at a page here. Can you believe this? 128 gigabyte. Now, this is at Staples. A thumb drive, $19.
Yeah.
Can you imagine, like, three years ago, that would have been you would have been paying... $89 to $100 and something dollars.
But it's technology that's going out of use right now.
Exactly. All right, guys, back in just a moment to answer some more of your questions. It's the Internet Advisor, and this is the hour of the program when normally we'd be taking your phone calls, but right now we're telling you. We're answering some of the emails that were sent in during the week. Lots of great emails were sent in, and Ed and Kel and some of the rest of us have taken a crack at answering. Ed really has borne the brunt of this burden. And we wanted to add some things to this last one that we were talking about, Ed, which was a question about whether a thumb drive was an appropriate medium or device for storing, for backing up on. And you guys raised some things during the break I think it's worth raising. And it's not just a matter of having the device there, but also a program to do that kind of backing up. Cal, that's a passion of yours, backing up.
Well, when you start walking away from things like external USB drives, or you're not using things like cloud-based storage, then they generally, now you're using thumb drives and those sort of things. So now you're behooved to come up with your own way of backing stuff up, which generally means using something like Windows Explorer or the Finder in Mac and doing a drag and drop backup, which is fine and dandy as long as, Ed pointed out, you know what you want to back up.
You know what you want to back up.
However, as Ed also pointed out, if you get like the external hard drives, like the ones by Seagate and Western Digital and that sort of thing, that come with the drive, which is huge. I always wanted to do that. and it also comes with software for backing up as well. Then it takes that burden off your lap and just goes out and gets everything and puts it onto that drive. Mm. So that's an important point that Ed brought up that I thought.
You know, one of the other things, too, is Gary, you used to call it belts and suspenders that you have in terms of security. But I think it applies to backup as well. You've got, like, for instance, I have a cloud-based backup. In addition to that, I have a Time Machine, because I'm working on a Mac, that is a backup that Apple supplies with its own machines. And then I have another hard drive that I use that I can put an image on. An image of the drive.
And do you keep track of when you've backed up to all of those different places?
No, the one, the Carbonite, continues. It's continuous backup.
Okay.
And the Time Machine are continuous backup. So the cloud and the external hard drive that's in my room right there are all
That's taken care of for me. I don't even think about that because I didn't want to. Yeah, I'm forgetful enough as it is.
Now, my clone backups, I believe Gary was trying to pull out a point there. My clone backups, which I do on my demand whenever I want to do, the only way I keep track of those is on the drive itself is a big old wampum sticker that says Cal's backup on date such and such.
Yeah.
And then that's the way I keep track of those particular ones. But you got to know what you got in front of you.
One of the reasons we've taken a little more time for this, Ed, is that sometimes you can put your confidence in a thumb drive and they can go south. You had an SD card, I think.
It went south for vacation. I never saw it again.
Yeah, and you had images on there that poof.
Yeah.
Gone. So don't put all of your eggs in one basket, I think, is the moral of that story. Okay, next question.
You know, this one came from Pat, and they had a question for Ed and said, I spoke today about my IE crashing continually. I upgraded to 8.1 months ago, and it only started to have problems last weekend. I heard you discuss on the air that Microsoft did reinstall Windows 8.1 Pro, did all the updates, and it still would crash. To repeat, I spent 4 hours last Saturday, and yada, yada, yada. So the question is, per your suggestion, I'm installing Firefox as a backup browser. Do you have any ideas? Please drop me a note. And this is from Pat.
And I'm not sure if I even replied back to that. What did I say? You're out of luck. No.
No.
No, I said, try calling us on the air. So it sounds like with that problem, it sounds like maybe there's some add-ons that have been on her Internet Explorer that are possibly damaging it, or possibly that she's installing software afterwards that put add-on programs.
Guys,
is
there a problem sticking with what do you think? Is there a problem sticking with 8.1, Windows 8.1, when Windows 10 is there? And have solved a lot of those problems, perhaps?
Why would you stay on 8.1?
That's my question, essentially.
Yeah, I can't imagine.
Why would you stay on 8.1?
You might want to stay on an earlier version if you are using software that's not written for Windows 10. So you may want to have to stay there until that software gets upgraded.
Could be software's keeping you there.
So sometimes those things will hold you in spot.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, I see no reason why you would not want to upgrade to 8 to 10. Not at all.
Yeah, but is 10 necessarily going to take care of this problem for them?
Well, it'll provide them an alternate inbuilt browser called Edge.
Yeah, yeah. And my thought, too, is that there have been so many changes in the software, in the operating system between 8.1 and 10, and all the other additions they've made, or improvements that they've made to it, that, you know, why buy the older model that you know has problems when you got a newer one?
I mean, if I was there, I could possibly go into Internet Explorer and be able to identify what's going on with Internet Explorer. An error would have been generated. I can go into the system event log and possibly see something. But without being there, the simplest solution is installing an alternate browser or going to Windows 10, as Gary suggested.
Here's a magic question that I have. Okay, so now they're running 8.1. They're having issues.
Mm-hmm.
Can you back up your data from 8.1 and install Windows 10 clean, or do you have to upgrade always?
Well, I think you can install clean, can't you?
Yeah, I think you can.
I don't know.
I did that. I know you can, first of all. I think you
I
can.
Know if you go, I know if you go out and buy Windows 10, you can install it clean.
You can still do it free, can't
no,
you?
No, you cannot. Well, you could. Microsoft claimed you could, and I tested it a week and 2 weeks after they claimed you did. Microsoft said that now with Windows 10, you can actually install, you could do a clean install because it'll grab your Windows 8 product key from the UEFI BIOS. I'm translating what Microsoft said. And you'll be able to do it. I tried it twice. Neither one of them worked.
Mm.
What I had to do was, though, if I erased the entire hard drive, and after I made a backup image of everything, I could install 8.1, and then I could do a clean install of 8.10 on top of it.
Or
Windows 10, and then it worked.
Okay, so as an upgrade, it worked.
From a clean install
of 8.1.
Yeah, I could not. It's been a month or two since I've tried it. I should probably try it again.
Yeah, so that's a great suggestion. I'm thinking the best way for this particular person to go would be to back up their pertinent data that they want, and then wipe the drive clean, use the factory reinstall that came with the computer, put it back to 8.1. Don't do anything other than wait for the little Windows 10 thing to show up. Once that shows up, hit it, reinstall that. Now they've got a clean, pristine operating system.
Or even hit the update button. And at that point, the update will automatically say, you want Windows 10? Boom, done. And you're installing it clean on top of that. Once more, folks, you hear what he said? If you have backed up, you can do things like this, and your data is always going to be safe. So once again, prior to anything we talk about here, backing up is so important.
Yeah, it lets us, like people like me, I make mistakes all the time on my computer. I'm like, oh, I'll just do this Windows 10 upgrade, and it'll be fine. I know what I'm doing, right? Mm. And then all of a sudden, everything's gone. Oh, my gosh. And, you know, and I do it because someone asked me a question or Microsoft claims that I should be able to do this. Mm-hmm. And then everything's gone. It's important because we make mistakes, too.
Absolutely.
That's why we hop back up.
Right. Exactly. It's our parachute. So that's important. One other thing that came up in that conversation that strikes me is something that, Gary, has been our mantra forever. And that is you need to have at least two browsers. You need to have two browsers that you're using so that if something goes south on one, something goes wrong on one, you've got another one you can bring in. You know, whether it's a Firefox or a Chrome or whatever else it is, along with Internet Explorer that you can use.
You know, that is so, so true. As a matter of fact, I lived that very incident this past week. Had an associate who had a Windows Vista machine, and they were having problems going to websites. And I went over and I said, okay, let's just, you know, upgrade IE to the next version. Well, under Vista, you can only go as high as IE9. However, I brought down a Vista version or Vista compatible version of Google Chrome.
Mm-hmm.
I can go wherever the heck I want.
Wow. Okay. That's another example, folks. This is something that helps you to have those two on. So that's just kind of
So here's another question. Okay. So do you have a Garmin still? Do you still use a GPS Garmin?
Why? No, I don't.
I still use mine every now and then, and it only because it gave me a lot more information than my phone's given me.
Okay. Well, that would be a good reason then.
Yeah.
Because we had a listener that said they're trying to update their Garmin, so they had to download a file from the Garmin website, and every time they tried doing it, this is from Richard, and it failed. So what would cause a downloaded file, which, you know, probably wasn't that large. It was only a couple megabyte. It said every time they tried downloading it, it would get halfway through and fail.
Generally speaking, it depends on the file that they're pulling down and whether or not that file is compatible with that model Garmin that they have.
Well, they're not trying to download it to the Garmin. They're trying to download it on their computer.
Ooh.
And so that they can then upgrade their Garmin. And I thought that was strange, too.
Did they try it again like a day or two later after?
They did not say.
So, you know, sometimes it's a corrupted file.
Yeah, the download file can be corrupted itself, yes.
Just try a little later.
I've had that happen.
That's a good point. And as it turned out, that's what they ended up doing. But they also upgraded their ISP from 6 megabyte to 12 megabyte, and it corrected their problem. And I'm thinking it's more like Gary's scenario. They waited a day or so, and then it just magically worked.
Let's talk about that when we come back again. You're listening to the Internet Advisor, getting some answers to your questions. I hope that you're enjoying this question and answer session we've been having here. It's kind of fun for us to do. Normally, we take phone calls and people will take some time to explain their problems. And then we go at like we're doing right now. The four of us get together, kind of put our heads together. And especially, I think Cal and Ed, from their vast experience in troubleshooting, bring their experiences to bear on this.
But it's a little harder now because we can't ask questions.
That's right.
So we have to make certain assumptions.
Yeah, and it's a little more of a challenge. But the nice thing about it, by the way, if you don't get on the phone with us, is that you can go to internetadvisor.net, and then in the right-hand corner, there's a contact button, and you can hit that button, and then you can send us an email with your question, and we can then go back and forth through the emails. And then also, at the bottom of our podcast, if you go to the very bottom of our homepage, there is a window there where you can put a comment in, and people have been putting questions in there as well. Ed, I wanted to get back to one thing just to touch on, because it came up at the very end before we went to the break, and that was you were saying that the solution came after that last caller who had problems downloading an upgrade file for their Garmin to their computer, changed their service with their ISP?
Yeah, they used AT&T UVerse, and they had a 6 megabit internet, right? And they already claimed that they tried multiple browsers. They tried Google Chrome and Google and Mozilla Firefox.
So this would be a DSL feed, probably?
So, you know, as soon as they said that they tried multiple sources, I'm thinking, well, it's not like it's being interrupted by the browser or a corrupted file, possibly in the download. It might be something with the ISP, or it might be something on the website that they're downloading it from that's interrupting it. The only other thing I could think of is possibly their antivirus software possibly interfering with the download, but I haven't heard stuff like that happen in a long time.
So when they stepped up and doubled their speeds...
I think it was just a coincidence.
Oh, okay.
Or it somehow fixed their internet service at that point.
Okay.
I'm not sure.
Okay. Interesting.
But
very
as
interesting.
Long as they were able to do what they
Gary
wanted.
Gary reminds me of the squirrels on the lines.
Trying everything. How would it ever be that?
Yeah, and it only happened on really humid days when it would get really bad.
Yeah, and that happened. That's how this program began 18 years ago, was that I was experiencing those kind of problems.
So somewhere out in the forest right now, there is a squirrel sitting there talking to other squirrels going like, you know, I started this internet thing.
I nibbled the insulation off of Foster Brown's wire.
The last name the squirrel's last name is Gore.
Albert? Albert! Okay, Eddie, what's the next question?
Okay, one more from Ron, and he had an interesting problem that I've seen many times, and Cal and I will attest to this, where a person's completely convinced that at the problem is one thing, and him and I will just look at each other going, we know what this is. So basically, they have this computer, and inexplicably, as they're typing on their laptop, the cursor will bounce from one side of the screen to the other as they're typing a sentence, and sometimes they'll type fast, and sometimes they'll type slow, and then all of a sudden, they're typing in the middle of another word on their screen, and they just do not, what is wrong with my keyboard? They're basically saying, can you please help me? And Cal and I both know this. And it came with the advent of touchpads on the computer.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. When they're typing along and their arm drags across that little trackpad on the front of the computer, and it, oh, wait a minute. If it's the left arm, it moves the cursor to the right. If it's the right arm, it moves the cursor to the left. And you just have to either A, turn the sensitivity down on the trackpad, or B, turn it off completely, and then that problem magically goes away,
so
correct?
This is a problem with laptops.
Yes.
Laptops, yes. Okay. And the people that I've worked with sometimes are just convinced that is not the case.
It's a poltergeist.
It is not. Why is someone's taken over my computer? The mouse is moving across the screen.
Yeah. Well, and sometimes the older it gets, the more sensitive it gets as well. And
oh, really?
You don't even have to touch it.
Yeah.
You just drag your hand across the surface without touching it.
Absolutely. The sensitivity does seem to increase, and you can actually get inadvertent clicks. So most of these have the ability where you disable them completely, and you hook up an external mouse, and lo and behold, the problem disappears.
You know, the other thing that I found out too is that the dirt and oils that accumulate on it seem to make it more conductive.
Right.
And
more
if
sensitive.
You clean it.
Oh, that's what it means.
If you clean it takes that sensitivity away as well.
That's a good point. Very good, Cal.
I never would have put that together, Cal.
Yeah.
That makes perfect sense. My sweaty palms are actually making it worse.
We're going to have to do a program. We've done this in the past on spring cleaning. Huh?
Sure, why not?
Spring cleaning?
It's not going to be as much fun as it was 10 years ago or so.
When you would clean your...
Never mind.
Yes. When the mouse got a cleaning. Okay, yes. Yeah. Okay. Any other questions?
Oh, my goodness, we're running out of questions.
Is that because the mouse no longer has...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's
you're right.
It saw the light.
It does. Cute.
It got neutered.
All right, we're talking about mouse balls. Mouse balls.
Okay. And I think lastly we have Patrick that had a question that I wasn't really sure how to answer. I have Internet Explorer 11 and it will not work. Whenever I start it, I get this error, and we're unable to return you to AOL. So the error basically is, you know, IE frame.dll and AOL.com, you know. So every time they launch AOL, something's happening and it's trying to contact AOL.
By the way, just a little footnote. Thank you for including the error message.
Yes.
Because when you send us a question very often, if you can catch, Cal, I've heard you say this before, if you can catch the error message, we can often then use that to solve the problem. So as you're asking a question, whether it's on the phone with us or in an email, please, if you can, capture that error message. Either write it down or sometimes just take a picture of it.
So if he were on the air right now with us, we'd ask him, does it happen at just one page in AOL or does it happen, you know, in a lot of different places?
You know, it might be that type of situation. A long time ago, AOL had its own browser in it.
Right.
And
oh, yeah.
So maybe that's what the issue is. But in this particular case, after looking at the error that Ed showed me, I bet you that if they go into internet options, tools, internet options, and looked at that spot where their homepage is set up at, I bet you that line is in there, and if they clear it out, that will fix it.
Yep, and that's what I suspected, was to just change your homepage and look at the homepage. That it may be actually going to an AOL website that and actually point to a DLL file or something like that, because that's one of the things AOL will do is you can actually put a command in your homepage or in that text where the homepage would go. The other thing I thought of, so they could modify that and just go to something like Microsoft.com or Google.com and make that as your homepage temporarily, see if that problem goes the way.
Okay.
The other thing is that you could go in and see if Microsoft Internet Explorer has add-ons, because AOL also can put an add-on or a program feature or a toolbar.
Internet Explorer 11?
11. Hey, my wife's father still uses AOL, and even though he has Comcast.
Didn't I hear that the Internet Explorer 11 doesn't allow extensions?
There's an iframe, that was what I was thinking. If it was some obscure place where he was going on AOL, and they still use iframes, and that may be a problem.
Oh, I
just
didn't even
consider
that.
Just the page was set up.
Well, one other thing you could do, too, just for, you know, grins, is maybe go into Tools, Internet Options, and then reset the browser
to default settings,
and see if that issue still
pops up. Can you still do that with 11?
Up.
I don't use 11. You can still do that.
Yes, absolutely. You can tell it to reset the settings to the default.
Boy, that's
and you can also start it with no add-ons. So you can look through your add-on programs.
That's just the other thing I was thinking of.
I'm thinking that there might be a toolbar in there, especially an AOL toolbar that's possibly enabled. You could just turn that off temporarily.
That's interesting, because that was a solution we handed out for a long time, was simply go into that far right of the tabs on Internet Explorer, restore to default settings, and often magically, shazam. Well, folks, that's kind of the way it works. We have questions coming in all throughout the weekend. Next week, when we come back with the Internet Advisor, we'll be live on WJR 760 AM, our home station in Detroit. But in the meantime, you can go to internetadvisor.net and look for the contact button. And when you get there, then simply click on that, put your question into an email there, and send it to us. And we will do our very best to answer it throughout the week. That's Ed and Cal, myself and Gary, giving a crack at answering your questions. Thanks so much for having joined us here on the Internet Advisor. By the way, if you want to see anything more about our previous hour, simply go to internetadvisor.net, and we will have all the details there for you. Have a great week. You've been listening to the Internet Advisor Show, Detroit's longest-running, locally produced computer show, with Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and our team of experts. For more information about our weekly show, to ask a question of our experts, or find the show notes for this podcast, visit internetadvisor.net and look for us on Facebook and Twitter. Don't forget to check the other great podcasts available on this PodcastDetroit.com network. Thank you for listening.